This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where I give you access each week to the world's greatest athletes and executives about their personal and professional playbook and what has made them champions on and off the field.
Yankees win!
That contract extension was for $176 million.
Touchdown! And a title for the Patriots!
I can't believe it!
I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
All right, this is Dave Meltzer, CEO of Sports One Marketing for Entrepreneur the Playbook. And I have to tell you, I'm really excited to be here with Tony Hawk. Not just because I wanted to be you when I was 12, but you're already winning stuff. I was, you know, lived close enough and we probably skated the same parks. I just was too much of a chicken to do what you did when we were 12.
I was just blissfully ignorant.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's good. Let's start there. You know, skateboarding to me is an analogy or an anomaly to life. Is I believe that the thing with success is that we prevent it. And the thing that prevents success from happening is fear.
Yeah.
And our ego-based fear. And I think with skateboarding especially, you know, it's really an area where how do you learn or is it, you know, was it ever present from a young age? You know, we'll talk about getting and turning 50, you know, soon. But when you're young, you know, where did fear come into play? Because you created like 100 different Tony Hawk moves. You're a creator, an innovator, and a legend. But where did fear come in and at what age or if at all?
Well, it was always present. I think I was able to recognize my limitations in some ways, but also it's just more a fear of failure. You know what I mean? It's not so much fear. It's just the fear of embarrassment or my buddy just made a trick. He was trying the whole time we were skating. So,
oh, right on.
See, he overcame his fear of embarrassment in front of me by doing it when I left.
I wouldn't dare get on a board in front of you. I'd be terrified to embarrass myself.
So I think it's more like, yeah, you don't want to fail in front of people. You don't want to let yourself down, so to speak. And skating is the quickest education in let that go. You know, you've got to, like, perseverance and determination is key in skating. And the stuff that you'll try hundreds, thousands of times, maybe just to get it once. And it all depends on if you're in the mindset, like, it's worth it for that. And it always was for me. But in terms of fear, like, I wasn't afraid to get hurt and I wasn't afraid of failure, and that really was to my advantage. And I didn't realize it at the time because I went through a string of injuries that, like, my parents were concerned. Doctors thought I was getting beaten. Like, that's no joke. They
right.
would pull me aside.
Social services
and say,
came
like,
in.
No, they would pull me aside and say, is there anything happening at home that I should know about? You know, things like that, because I was consistently getting hurt, and yet I would never quit.
Right. Now, let's talk about not quitting, because one of the problems with athletes who are entrepreneurs, and you are truly a successful businessman, is that we don't know when to quit. And sometimes we ride a business like we ride a board,
right,
where we keep, you know, you have the skills, the knowledge, and desire to be a great skateboarder. One of the skills of being an entrepreneur is, hey, this business isn't going to work.
Well, I think it's more about the stakes, too. So you can use that lesson. That lesson definitely transcends skating. Like, there are certain things that I tried growing up that were far more dangerous than the other tricks that I was trying. And so the risk factor was huge. And so I did know when to quit because I just couldn't take it physically anymore. You know, there were a few tricks that I did through my life that was like, all right, that, you know, if this goes wrong one more time, it could be over.
Right. You're not walking.
And the same can be true of business. Like, you could have a business that you really are passionate about, and it fails consistently to the point where you're broke.
Yeah.
I mean, and you gotta know to pull out before then. And I've definitely had that too. Like, I had a business about 10 years ago that we got in over our head. We got into a market that we really didn't know about. And it was just draining the rest of the companies under our umbrella dry. And we finally knew when to quit before the whole thing went under.
Right, which is a really sharp talent, because a lot of times, you know, I run into this with football and baseball players especially, because, you know, they're just trained to, like, never say die. But meanwhile, you know, Lenny Dykstra is a guy that's proven. They keep throwing their own money at a business, even though it's going to kill everything. And
right.
I think, you know, I'm one of those guys. I was worth a fortune in my 30s and I lost everything. And I think transcended my life of I didn't want to quit. And it was mostly the fear of embarrassment. I didn't want to, because I was known as a Midas guy, right? A millionaire, 9 months out of law school, from San Diego. All my family lived here. And I used to tell people 10 years ago, if you would have told me I'd stand in front of thousands of people and tell people I went bankrupt, it would have been, I would have rather died. Like that embarrassing.
Yeah.
What do you think was more embarrassing or ego hitting is, you know, sometimes you have these embarrassing moments in sports where you are less than your best. And you know, do these tremendous falls or whatever, or, you know, having to admit, hey, 10 years ago, I had a failing business. Can you compare those two types of embarrassments?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, another example of skateboarding, it teaches you humility. And, you know, you go out in front of so many people and fail over and over, that teaches you a sense of humility. But also, I grew up in a time when my style of skating was considered very uncool. And so I had to fight for acceptance throughout most of my career. I mean, even, you know, even through the success, and it was like, well, he's a sellout. And it's like, well, wait a second. I'm still doing the exact same thing I was always doing. I'm just now finally getting paid for it. Like, I don't have to get a job anymore and I'm not sacrificing my values. So is that selling out? And I've learned to accept those criticisms. And that was helpful in all my walks of life and to forge ahead the way that I believed in, as opposed to altering my path or my value system in order to please others.
Yeah, it's a great point. Right?
And you can do that in business as well. I mean, you know, there are definitely businesses where you can jump on the bandwagon, you can do all the stuff that's cool at the time, but you're not going to stand out.
Yeah.
You got to keep doing something different.
It's interesting. Like, you're a guy that I think of and I really relate this find your frequency. Marcellus Wiley, who's also, you know, an ex San Diego guy, he, you know, grew up in Compton and he was a typewriting champion in eighth grade, the state's typewriting champion.
Yeah,
And he like explained to me at that age, because it was embarrassing, you know, here's this football player.
Right.
And, yeah. But that was his frequency. And he would always say that, you know, he wanted to be known as intelligent. That's why he went to Columbia instead of the big schools that recruited him. And when I think back growing up, you know, right around you, and your name was always circling as, you know, one of the best, if not the best. I think about a guy that you just had your frequency. And I think today it's more important than ever to know your frequency, because we're so connected through social media that there's 7 billion people on Earth and there's 3.2 billion on the internet.
Right.
And so if you know your frequency and you would rather people hate you for who you are than love you for who you're not and quit trying to please everyone, you can actually get farther and farther ahead by attracting those people with the same frequency. If I was gonna ask you today, what do you think that frequency is now that you're, you know, turning 50 like me and things change, you have four kids like me, a lot of similarities except you're a great athlete. what is that frequency today where you think, hey, you know, this is where I'm a maverick?
Well, first and foremost, skateboarding, but more so the promotion of skateboarding in a global sense. And for me, just truly sharing my experiences, because I do, you know, I get very rare opportunities, and I am fully aware of that, you know, the traveling and the people I get to meet and things like that. And I want to share that. And I don't take it for granted. I'm not trying to show it off. I'm not trying to, you know, Kardashian my way, like, look at my bling, look at, I'm with all the famous people.
Right.
It's just more like, well, this is crazy. I'm a skateboarder and I, you know, I get to meet the president.
Right.
Obama,
yeah,
that is.
In the White
Obama.
House. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I much prefer.
I get that.
So, you know, and so in that sense, I guess my frequency is that I'm a passenger and I'm thankful for all this and come along with me.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. If I had to have like a signature on my social media, that's what it is. It's like, I can't believe I got this crazy life. Check this out. Yeah. But other than that, you know, it's just like parenting, just everyday observations with parenting and philanthropy, because I was able to turn what I did into a way to help others, and especially through skateboarding and skate parks, and to give kids in challenged areas a place to go and do something positive. That is my frequency. It's very much, skateboarding is the main thread, obviously, but more so just a different aspect on life. Because I have a perspective that people, you know, that is very different in terms of where I came from.
Yeah, I think your gracious frequency comes across, and also humility is something. I have two words next to my nightstand, and it reminds me because I live a similar life. I pinch myself every day, and I think it's funny because I have radical humility next, because that was the reason I lost everything, but it's also the reason because I lost it. And then I gained it all back through humility. Mm-hmm. And I think it's funny that you sit in front of me, because on the way down here, you know, I've had Hall of Famers because of running a big sports agency, this inner circle of sports entertainment. I've been around the who's who of everyone. And I always feel the same way. Like, what am I doing here? And now that I've built my own brand, but I never imagined driving down here because, you know, maybe because I've known you since I was a kid or of you. And as an entrepreneur and a sports athlete, I'm such a fan that, you know, when I get around people that I really haven't got to know yet, like Joe Montana, when I first met him, I actually broke down as an agent. I'm like, you're my hero.
That's pretty cool.
Lee was like, yeah, Dave. But honestly,
no, a lot of like, Chris Farley moments for sure.
Yeah. But you, like, I was here going, wow, this is one of the biggest stars that I've got on my podcast. We've like Andre Reed and Warren Moon and Jim. I mean, big names are on Deepak Chopra, mm-hmm. you know, great names on the podcast. But for me, Tony Hawk is equal to or greater than. And yet you're telling me that you pinch yourself like I do going, I got to meet Obama, where I bet you Obama was just excited to meet you as well. So that radical humility, has that always been there? Because I mean, at 12 years old, you're winning, you know, championships by, you know, 16, you're a pro, or 14.
Yeah, but see that all that stuff, you know, and especially when you talk about other sports stars and things, it was much different for me because, like, the people that you're talking about who are, you know, famous basketball,
traditional sports,
football,
right?
Traditional sports, guys, mainstream sports, or popular sports, they had the opportunity to dream of being successful with it. Rich and famous, whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Good point.
When I got into skateboarding, no one was rich or famous from skateboarding.
Well, you're actually
was
looked
no
down
way.
Upon.
Like the dream.
You're
was,
looked down upon. You're a slacker.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, you yeah. were we
you're
were
a stoner
below,
and a slacker.
We were
if you,
below
if you skated.
The nerds on the totem pole of the, you know, hierarchy of cool in school, but more so in terms of wanting to be a professional, so to speak. It just meant that someone might give you free gear. That was it. Like, that was the extent of, right. of the success. And maybe you got your picture in a magazine, and when you turned 18, you go get a job. That was it.
Yeah.
And so I never had those dreams of you know, fantastic fame and fortune, because it just wasn't something that existed. And nor did I say, I'm going to sit out and do that. I mean, you know, I was 14 when I turned pro. I wasn't
you
making some
skating.
Great proclamation about skateboarding and saying, I'm going to take this further than anyone ever has. It was just more like, I love doing it. And luckily, I was so young that I was naive in the sense that, why isn't this my career?
Yeah.
Well, all I wanted was a moped. So, you know, I was working
a Yamaha,
that.
Right? That was the big one at the time.
Yeah, I got one.
I see.
Did.
Me
yeah,
too.
I had a Yamaha moped just so that I could go to the skate park when I wanted to.
That's what I
and
wanted.
Not wait for my dad to get home from work.
Nice. I had a red Yamaha.
I
can
had
feel
a
you,
one.
Man. That's awesome.
And
these kids are like, what's a Yamaha hopper?
Yeah,
it's embarrassing. It's like, I can't say too much of the other side. They joke about a Yamaha hopper.
But so but you know, when you say you're winning championships, a championship was like a small gathering of skaters.
Yeah.
And when I turned pro, this is not a joke, when I filled out the entry form, I checked the pro box instead of the amateur box, and then I was pro.
Right.
That was it.
That's
there was
awesome.
No, there was champagne. There was no celebration.
Getting, the only thing is you couldn't get a scholar,
no signing
scholarship
bonus.
Anymore, right?
So my first royalty check was $4.85 for skateboards.
Right.
Which
it's
means
like
they
Bobby
sold
Bell.
That means they sold 5 skateboards with my name on it.
That is awesome.
And I wasn't crushed. Like,
you're happy.
Yeah, there was no
five
there was
people
no gold
your
standard to live by. So it was like, okay, cool. I got $5.
You are like John Madden. So because, you know, I love Madden because I've known him forever, and he got into football because he loved it. And never in his wildest dreams did he think that he would make more money from putting his, he's not even announcing in his video game anymore, Madden Football, right? His name is just on it. And he makes more money in 2017 than in his entire career playing and coaching a Super Bowl champion football team. But it's the same story when I talk to him. He's like, yeah, Dave, but you don't understand. And Bobby Bell for the Kansas City Chiefs, $5,800 a year, had to drive a taxi on the offseason. Right. And now he gets paid for an appearance. And he's like, Dave, you don't understand. I just love playing. I'm going to talk about that for a second, because I was just in Curacao and I met this kid, Profar. He was the highest paid 16-year-old in Latin America. He signed for $1.55 million. But the coolest story was everybody wanted him to be a pitcher. He won the Little League World Series when he was 12. He was a pitcher and he was the number one prospect. And I asked him, well, why won't you pitch? Because he kept telling all these teams, I don't want your money. I don't care. I'm not going to pitch. And his reason was pitchers don't play every day. So, right? And that's a Tony Hawk thing, right? You were just doing it. Now, when did the transition happen? Because you became a great businessman and entrepreneur. And, you know, you started your own companies. You really branded yourself well. And you built a sport. In fact, your own charity, the Tony Hawk Foundation, is about truly building your sport and helping others learn those skills, knowledge, and desire that you had, right? You give low-income, like 500 skate parks around the country. You know, it fits in line. When did that transition occur?
It was around the time that my video game was released, because suddenly there was this recognition of my name that sort of went way beyond skateboarding and a lot of times went way beyond me as a person. And it became like my name was a, you know, for lack of a better word, a property, a franchise.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, wait a second, this is a business. And, you know, I have these other opportunities now to do things in terms of, you know, not just promoting skateboarding, but doing other licensing deals, clothing lines, shoes, and other appearances and endorsements. And it was like, well, this is a business. And then I realized, like, it's way bigger than I ever imagined it could be or I ever wanted it to be necessarily. And how can I do something to help other people, to help skaters, to give back to the community that got me here, you know, that gave me more than I ever dreamed. And so that was my way of doing so, is through doing a foundation of building public skate parks in low-income areas. And we kind of just, it had never been done. So we just started, we just kind of DIY, which is the skateboarding creed, basically.
Yeah.
But it was just like, how do we do this? How can we help? How can we make our money effective? Because the money we were giving and the money we were raising wasn't enough to build full skate parks in terms of doing anything effective like that. So our biggest grant at the time was $25,000 for a skate park. But because they got our endorsement and because they got our funding, they would get a lot more donations, recognition.
It would push it through the red tape. Yeah. Which helps get that right.
Yeah, and really with we've given away over $6 million so far to build over 550 skate parks. But that $6 million has really parlayed into more like $100 million.
Right, as a bug light.
What's that?
As a bug light, because once you're involved, everything goes smoother, more money comes in, et cetera. So, you know, that's an exponential ripple that occurs.
And that, to me, that's way more important, because that shows that we have been effective with how we do things. And we are a very strong resource center for these communities that want to get it going. You know, when they come to us, we don't even necessarily have to give them money. We just give them the guidebook to do it.
Nice. Well, growing up and you're an innovator in the sport, and so you didn't have many mentors because nobody had ever done really what you were doing. And then, you know, the video game comes out, and it's enormous, right? I know the feeling, our TV show that we just did, and I started branding myself like 3 years ago, like I did the athletes, and all of a sudden 15 million people watch your show. And people stop you at the game and go, hey, Mr. Meltzer, I've seen your videos. Oh, cool. And so I know kind of that first feeling of it. What to you, did you seek mentors? Or because it gets scary, you know, like, wait a second, I this is a whole thing that I don't understand.
Yeah,
did you get a mentor?
I took cues. Like, I saw how other people ran their foundations. Mm-hmm. Andre Agassi, you know, even the time Lance Armstrong, and say what you will about his professional life, like,
sure,
he did more for charity and cancer awareness than any one person, you know.
Right.
And I believe that he had a sea change in terms of philanthropy. And so I took cues from that as well. And cool. So it was just more like, I didn't really know what, and, you know, and we have our expertise. We obviously have our, not bubble, but you know, the way that we do things, and we know how skate parks work. We know who we're serving and how to get things done. But on a bigger scale in terms of fundraising and how to be effective, I took it either from other pro athletes, you know, I took incentives, or from other charities that I thought did really well, like Charity Water. You know, their fundraising model was very high tech at the time, mostly online, and very much like give them money, give a dollar, and watch your dollar go to build this well in this city in Ethiopia, or in this village in Ethiopia, right?
Right.
And I thought, I was like, now that is something that I can get behind, because that you are embedded in that process. Absolutely. You know, and you're
it's
actually
empowerment.
Yeah, you're part of it. You're connected to it. And I was like, that's what I want to do with our foundation. You know, it's hard because it gets messy with fundraising and trying to show exactly where your dollars go. But we've done a pretty good job of it. But mostly just in terms of having an online presence and a way to do micro donations for people who are inspired to give, but maybe don't have that much to give.
Yeah. And that's the Obama way of becoming president, right? People were just giving small amounts for his election campaign. You know, as a final question, you know, obviously you're leaving this huge legacy in skateboarding. You're leaving a huge legacy in the business of sports. But I'm more interested in your foundation and the legacy of Tony Hawk, of what you're leaving with these 550. And by the time it's all over, it'll be thousands of parks. And it's not just about skateboarding. What legacy do you want to leave with all this philanthropic immense project that you took on, these great work? What legacy does Tony Hawk want to leave?
Well, I hope mostly someone that raised the awareness of skateboarding as a positive activity or positive influence for kids, and something more global in terms of skate facilities and the recognition of skateboarding. I mean, I'm hugely proud of the success we had at our foundation, but I feel like that's just a start. We're in the U.S. Skating there are seeds planted all over. I mean, I've been in recent years to Ethiopia, to Cambodia, to Sierra Leone, to South Africa, and there are thriving skate scenes in these countries because someone came and just took the incentive and was like, here's a skateboard. Here's a couple of little ramps, and this is what's possible. And they took it and it spread like wildfire. And I would rather know that my influence helped to grow that in a much bigger way in terms of the unlikely places. That's more exciting to me as a legacy. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm really proud of everything we've done in the US, but the idea that there is this kid in Ethiopia that can now do kickflips, and that's his escape from his daily life that is difficult, is incredible to me.
That's awesome. We will help you with that. You know, I'm fortunate to be a Goodwill ambassador to the Dutch Islands, and skateboarding's huge in all of Holland and these islands. We are down there all the time. And then in Kenya, I'd love to include it in our empowerment. For my 50th birthday, I'm doing a 50 for 50. We're raising $1 million for empowerment and leadership in Africa.
Wow.
And so I'd love to include some Tony Hawk facilities in that program, because I think it's a great way, like you said, to enjoy your life, even if you have additional stresses and challenges that other people don't have, and escape.
Yeah, well, I've seen it firsthand. I've been to the Johannesburg facility that just opened for Skatistan. These kids are, you know, it's rough out there.
Yeah,
especially where they're from, and they come to that facility, and for those couple hours or for that half a day, they get to get away from that and also learn life skills. They're going to help them escape, you know, whatever route is sort of some of them feel stuck with.
Yeah. Well, we're coming to an end here. I just want to really thank you. I mean, you are a true philanthropist. You are an innovator. And, you know, as much as you think you're blessed to be around all these great celebrities and athletes and pinch yourself, this is a day for me. I'm hoping we become friends, because I've looked forward to meeting you for a long time. And like I said, I'm a huge fan, not just of your skating, but of your business acumen. And most importantly, what I keep reading about you, everything you do for others, and to grow up in the same area as you and to know about you and to see you for so long, you know, I just, am humbled by one of the most humble athletes I've ever met. So thank you very much for being on.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for including me. Thanks for coming all the way to my office with all your gear.
Coolest office ever. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneur The Playbook. Be sure to tune in next Tuesday when we feature another story on how a sports icon went from the playing field to the boardroom.